When it comes to the lean executive recruiting landscape, staying ahead means staying informed. Subscribing to the Stiles Associates email list gives you access to the latest compensation data, industry analysis, and career resources straight from their recruiting team. Plus, you'll receive hand-picked career opportunities from leading companies, whether you're seeking new challenges or just curious about the market. So head over to leanexecs.com and sign up to get on the Stiles Associates email list and transform the way you make strategic decisions for your company and your career. Thanks for listening. Did you know I can help your organization on this journey of cultivating a culture of learning and innovation? I can be a trainer, coach, and advisor on topics including psychological safety, problem solving, and continuous improvement. I can add value to your management team meetings by speaking and facilitating discussions on these important topics. To learn more, visit markgraben.com or email me, mark@markgraben.com. Let's improve together.
Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, this is Mark Graben from the Lean Blog. This is episode number 52 of the Lean Blog podcast for November 3rd, 2008. Our guest today is Dan Markovitz. He's the founder and president of Time Back Management, which is a corporate efficiency training firm that specializes in the application of lean manufacturing principles to business processes. And Dan is a regular contributor to the Lean Blog, so many of you may recognize his name, and now you get to hear his voice talking about lean and office and administrative business process type settings. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. If you have any feedback or questions, you can communicate with us by going to leanpodcast.org and looking for the blog post for episode 52. Again, our guest is Dan Markovitz from Time Back Management. Dan, thanks for taking time to join us on the Lean Blog podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it, Mark.
Well, I was wondering if you could, if we could start by having you introduce yourself a bit to our listeners. They may have read your blog and seen information on your website, but if you could tell us a little bit about your own lean story and, you know, how you first learned about, first got involved with lean.
Well, obviously my name is Dan Markovitz and my company is Time Back Management. Originally, I started with lean back in 1992 or 1993. I read Jim Womack's book, The Machine That Changed the World, and that pretty much flattened me. I was amazed by it, and it had nothing to do actually with the reduction in waste or the lower cost of producing cars or the faster throughput of cars. What really struck me was the respect for people, which is, of course, one of the things that people often lose sight of when they are talking about lean. It's all about getting rid of waste. But really, respect for people is at the core of lean. It's one of the pillars. And that's what got me. Here's a company, this enormous auto company, that viewed its employees as real assets, not just as hands, but as minds, and not just as a cost, but as an asset that could really help help the company grow. Everyone, and that's from the top of the pyramid to the lowest level employee. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this is a radical way of thinking about work, and this is a radical way of thinking about an enterprise. And that really lit the fire, and that really stimulated my interest in this thing called lean.
Sure. So from that initial spark, what was your first opportunity to start putting some of those practices into action?
Well, it actually gestated for a good many years. I went through several careers after that, which I don't need to go into now. Mm-hmm. But it was about 3 or 4 years ago that I started doing this current line of work, which is consulting and helping companies eliminate the waste in administrative processes. And what I realized, what I saw over and over again, were people who were stressed out at the office, who were forgetting things, who were just wasting time and wasting energy, doing things that were adding no value at all to the organization, no value at all to the customer. And I realized that over the years, I had developed my own lean work habits, whether it was the creation of checklists to make sure that things were done on time, to a better form of organization of information so that I wasn't wasting time looking for stuff. And I started putting the pieces together and saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, this ties into that lean stuff that I read about. And then I started going back and reading more about it and reading more about blogs and reading things coming out of the Lean Enterprise Institute and I recognized that the way that individuals work in a business process, or let me say this, that the business process is just like a production line. It's just that the product is usually non-tangible. It's not physical. And I realized as well that the work that individuals do in a business process can be improved and waste could be driven out just the same way that working on an assembly line, attaching a bumper or a side view mirror to a car, that process can be improved.
And so in the work that you do through time back management, I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the methodology and this, you know, specialization, if you will, of applying lean to administrative processes, what type of engagements you have with people, what you see, what types of improvements people are able, you know, organizations are able to make by eliminating waste from, you know, knowledge work or you know, office type settings.
So one thing that I want to clarify is that there are an awful lot of people who do value stream mapping and business process improvement, and that's obviously very, very important. There's a huge role for lean there. But what I look at really is the way individuals work. It's sort of lean at the individual desktop level. The way I often describe it, the analogy I use, is that if you think about a business process as sort of a relay, people spend an awful lot of time working on the handoffs, making sure that there's the shortest, the handoff between this department and that department is as smooth and fast and effective and efficient as possible, and that's great. The problem is that if the runners are slow, the relay team is still going to lose. A runner has to be efficient. He or she has to be able to get around the track quickly. So my goal is to make people faster runners by driving out the waste in their own activities. So, for example, I'll work with people. I worked with a law firm with a bunch of partners there. And one of the things that the value that they added as a partner was not billable hours, just cranking out time, but it was actually business development. The firm expected them to spend more time finding new business. And they were not spending a whole lot of time. And in working with them and trying to understand how they individually process their work, handle all their client demands, and making a more efficient process, creating better work habits, creating standard work for them, bringing 5S to their individual workspaces, creating a cadence for their high-value work, we were able to increase the time that they were spending on business development by about 25% over the previous amount of time they had spent.
And so that time is leading to, I would assume, more sales and revenue impact on the business instead of thinking about lean as cost cutting. That sounds like a nice outcome.
Exactly. I mean, I suppose you could call it, the focus there was generating more more work and more revenues for the firm. So that's well said. It wasn't just about reducing costs, unless you consider, of course, that they have a salary that they're pulling down or a share of the partnerships revenues or profits. So now we're driving down the cost because they're, you know, being paid. We're not paying for stuff that's not adding value.
And wanted to follow up on one word that you used when you talked about creating a cadence in somebody's work. Makes me think of tack time or rhythm in a production operation. Can you give an example? How would that apply for a lawyer or a consultant or any other, you know, individual knowledge worker?
That's a good question. When I think about a cadence, again, whether it's a lawyer or an accountant or someone in marketing or PR, they're working on a production line, and they have unlike someone working on a physical production line, they have multiple value streams running through them, which makes this all the more complicated. But let's take these lawyers, for example. they had to do business development activities. And what they would find is at the end of each month, they'd see their the number of hours on a report of how much time they spent doing promotional activity. And they'd say, oh, gosh, I didn't do enough. And then the next week, they would try to cram in a whole bunch of time.
Yeah.
And so their current clients would suffer, or they themselves would be squashed because their current clients who are actually paying the bills say, well, we need you now. And so they would have to try to fit in their client work and their business development work and all the other things they had to do. So instead, we started saying, okay, let's create a cadence. What is an appropriate amount of time? What's the rhythm for going out and doing business development? Is this something you need to do every day? Is it something you need to do twice a week? Is it something you need to spend an hour on or 3 hours in each week? And building that into their work schedules so that they were able to create some level loading, some heijunka of that kind of work. So instead of it being some sort of fire drill at the end of the quarter, at the end of the month, now all of a sudden, yes, here's the two hour block of time, or here's the 3 hours per week that I'm supposed to be doing. And although it seems simple, and of course, like lean, so much of it is simple, but it's something that no one really thought about in the crush of the phone calls and the emails and the knocks on the door and all the other crises that would erupt during the course of the day. They wouldn't realize that they need to keep a cadence.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like what you're describing is intentionally having a planned rhythm to your work instead of just being reactive, or in the example you gave, overreacting when you realize, whoops, not enough time. Now we're going to overcompensate by spending more time, which I'm sure perpetuates a cycle of now they're not spending enough time somewhere else, and then they overreact. And
exactly. And so you need to, you've actually gone in a little bit farther than I've thought through this, but that's exactly right. And so now their production scheduling is all over the dish. You know, it's, oh my gosh, we've got to make more Camrys right now. No, now we have to make more Priuses. No, now we have to make more Avalons. The factory can't work that way. Mm-hmm. They have to have some sort of predictable flow. Now, there's always going to be some sort of variation in there, but there's a predictable load to that, and that creates smoother workflow for everyone.
Because I think of my own work as a consultant, there's always some unpredictability, but there's some ability to be able to plan and not be as reactive. I can see the benefits from applying that to looking at a weekly calendar or a monthly or a quarterly cycle, or you know, not waiting until the last month of the year to try to get all of your required training in, for example, like some people might not end up having to do.
There's a fear, I think, when I work with people in knowledge workers and administrative processes, they say, you know, there's so much unpredictability. I don't know what kind of fires are going to crop up. And that's absolutely true. You can't create a cadence for everything because you can't control everything. There's always going to be problems. There's always going to be unforeseen issues that crop up. However, we can create a cadence. We can create standard work for things that we can control. And to not do that is a terrible waste, or leads to an increase in waste, and it leads to an increase in inefficiency. Right. So let's control the things we can. Your sales efforts, your business development efforts, for example, Mark, as a consultant, you can schedule that. You can't schedule what your clients are going to need,
right. For
sure. You can't schedule what problems are going to happen. But some of those things, your bookkeeping, your accounting, your expense reports, you can totally put that into a schedule and create a cadence for it. Mm-hmm. And your accountant will love you, by the way, if you did that.
Yeah. I wanted to go back and touch a little bit on 5S and visual management in an office setting. What examples you can share of that being effective? I think in factories, there's times where people just put tape around everything because the consultant says we have to put tape around everything. And sometimes you see that happening in office settings. There was a story a lot of the listeners might be aware of. It was on the blog a while back. An accounting firm in the UK where made the media that government accountants were up in arms that they were having to put tape around their phone on their desk and tape marking where the keyboard could go and stuff like that. Starts to seem a little trivial or silly. There's got to be a better opportunity than that. I was wondering what thoughts you had on 5S and visual management.
Yeah, I think that the to quote you, Mark, the tape around the phone and the keyboard is an example of lame and not lean. Yeah, 5S does have a role, and it does have a place. Mm-hmm. And the place in a knowledge worker's world is to help the knowledge worker access the tools of his or her trade and to access the things that they're working on. In this case, knowledge worker is always working on information. Mm-hmm. You're in a business process. You're working on information. So how can we apply 5S, deploy 5S, so that people are able to access the information they need quickly, efficiently, and without error? Where your stapler goes couldn't matter less, as long as you can actually find your stapler.
Sure.
Put it on the floor, put it on the top of the computer, put it in a drawer, doesn't matter. But if you have to look for your stapler, that's a real problem. Mm-hmm. Similarly, if you are spending 5 minutes looking for an email, well, I've got 14,000 emails in my inbox. I know, first I'm going to sort by sender. And because my boss sends me an awful lot of emails, I'll have to spend another 3 or 4 minutes sifting through the 200 emails from him to find the one email that has the attachment that I'm looking for. That's not really good. That's an exercise in frustration. It's wasted time. It's time that's not spent creating value for the customer. Mm-hmm. So applying 5S, bringing organization to one's information, that makes a lot of sense. So how are you going to organize your physical files so that you can find the stuff you need when you need it? How are you going to organize your electronic files? How do you organize your email? And the statistics are staggering. You know, there are this was in 1997, the Wall Street Journal had an article that said that executives are spending 6 weeks a year looking for information, not actually doing anything, just mm-hmm. looking for information.
Wow.
And that was 1997. That was before email really came on strong. And you can only imagine that the situation has gotten worse.
Oh, of course.
And I see it all the time. People saying, oh, yeah, I can find it. I can find that. And unless they're a savant, and there are some savants for sure who really do know where the exact email is or the piece of paper.
Right.
Unless you're a savant, that's just pure muda. So figuring out a system to organize that information is I think, smart 5S. It's 5S that's intelligently applied, and it really does help mm-hmm. solve problems, and it really does help reduce waste.
And do you have any quick tips? I'm sure everybody listening has to manage and deal with email at work. What are some guidelines or ideas that you share with people?
Well, the first thing is that people hold on to emails as though they're some sort of family heirloom. And in general, emails are more like a quart of milk, and
yeah,
they go bad after a while, after a week or 2 weeks. You know, email is tends to be, not exclusively, of course, but I'm speaking in generalities, tends to be a very transient, very ephemeral kind of communication. If I send you an email, Mark, it's because it's something that you either need to do for me or something that you need to know about for the next week or so. After that, very often, it's garbage. And so the strongest suggestion I can make, the first suggestion I would make, is to throw out email.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw it out. I mean, I'm perhaps a little to the extreme in tossing stuff, but there are very, very, very few times that I've actually regretted not having an email.
Yeah.
It really hasn't cost me a whole lot. And I would argue that even if it has cost me something, some effort in recreating some information or some effort, some extra time reconnecting with you, say, to figure out where we were, I've more than made up for that cost by being more productive during all the other hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just curious. So if you're talking about getting rid of emails, and if we have a cleaner inbox, I guess there's less time required to search through, like that scenario you gave of looking through the list of boss emails, which one, if there's fewer there, easier to find, right?
Exactly. There's also, I should add, it's not just a matter of spending time looking for it. There really can be a huge cost. I don't know if you remember, in 1999, I believe it was, NASA sent up a spacecraft to Mars. It was called the Mars Climate Orbiter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to orbit the planet and take atmospheric samples and radio back. And the spacecraft blew up in orbit. it turns out that the problem was, and you may remember this, that there were two engineering teams, basically. One was the flight engineers and one was the design engineers. One was working in English units and one was working in metric.
That's right, yeah.
It blew up in orbit because they didn't make the conversions. Now, the conversions could have been made pretty simply, but they got the units wrong. But here's the kicker. There was an email about this exact problem that was sitting in the flight director's inbox, along with, I don't know, 4,000, 14,000, 40,000 other messages. And it said, hey, we've got this problem. Before we go into orbital insertion, we need to make the conversions, otherwise we're going to have problems. But because it got pushed down below the fold, you know, your screen, you can only see, 15, 20, 30 emails. Once it got buried, she forgot about it. She didn't know about it. So she couldn't look for something that she didn't know existed. Mm-hmm. And that's a real problem. So helping to get rid of the garbage, even if it's only 10 kilobytes or 20 kilobytes of a message, it's still garbage. Mm-hmm. It takes up space on the screen, and it means that we have a lower likelihood. The signal-to-noise ratio is terrible, and we have a much lower likelihood of being able to find the signal amidst the noise.
Sure.
So that's one. That's certainly the first thing that I talk about, and then we can, if you're interested at some point, I can certainly talk more about management of email and how it ties into lean principles.
Sure. And, you know, hopefully we can do another discussion. I know there's more we can delve into. And, if any of the listeners have questions for Dan and there's enough to prompt a second podcast, please send feedback via the podcast page that's there on the blog. Personally, I'd like to do another discussion with you, but maybe we can steer it towards what kind of feedback or question that the listeners have.
I would love that.
And to wrap up, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts and ideas for us. If people want to follow up with you, if they're interested in, applying lean concepts to their own work or within their organization, first, how can people contact you? And secondly, what types of services do you provide? Training, consulting, things like that.
The best way to contact me is is via email, of course, and that's dan@timebackmanagement.com.
Okay.
My website is timebackmanagement.com. People can email me from there, or just obviously send me an email. They can also call me. The kind of services I provide are generally I work with organizations, whether it's nonprofit, governmental, for-profit, doesn't matter. And I'll do anything from a 1 or 2 hour seminar to full-on multi-day hands-on implementation and deployment of the lean principles,
mm-hmm.
Creating consensus within the organization about what kind of standard work is necessary, what kind of policy should be taken on, so that people then have ownership of the lean transformation. They start to make the changes by themselves in their organization in a way that works for them. I can only, I think most lean consultants, I can only provide some ideas and a starting point, but the actual implementation and the adaptation to the idiosyncrasies of each organization has to be done by the people who work there. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
No, I think that gives people a starting point. I'm sure they can learn more by going to your website and reaching out to you. So again, Dan Markovitz was our guest today. Really want to thank you, Dan, for taking some time out. And it's good talking to you live after all the interaction and participation that you've done on my blog and interaction through your blog. So hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Pleasure was mine, Mark, and thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email mark@leanpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, podcast listeners, I'm excited to announce the release of the audiobook version of my new book, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. Listen and dive into powerful insights on fostering growth through mistakes. Whether you're a leader, entrepreneur, or just trying to get better at learning from mistakes, this audiobook is for you. Get it now on Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. Visit mistakesbook.com for more info.